We accept the reality of the world with which we're presented. It's as simple as that.
We no longer live in a world of nations and ideologies, Mr. Beale. The world is a business, Mr. Beale.
Go on without me. Just go!
A good soldier never leaves a man behind.
Because I wouldn't give you 2 cents for all your fancy rules if behind them they didn't have a little bit of plain, ordinary, everyday kindness.
Life, finds a way.
Welcome to Silver Screen Biases. Each week we pick a movie off of IMDb's Top 250 and dig into it. We're examining truth claims in critically acclaimed movies while also examining our own biases. I'm Nelson.
This is Jeff.
And this week,
Fargo.
This episode is brought to you by our community on Patreon. They make this show happen and you can help. Links to our Patreon and merchandise are in the show notes. Now back to the show.
Welcome back.
Welcome back.
We're here. Welcome to the square table of movie knowledge. I just came up with that just now. Probably couldn't tell.
You should go into advertising.
It's my nightmare.
You're seeing Mad Men?
I've not.
Is that the name of the show?
Mad Men. Made Men. Mad Men. You're right.
Mad Magazine.
Mad, yeah.
I've not seen Mad Men.
The TV show, right? AMC. Yeah,
it's got John Hamm in it. It's got a bunch of smoking women.
Yeah.
And by that, I mean not that they're attractive, which they are because they're in Hollywood, but they are literally smoking nonstop.
My first introduction to Mad Men, and my only introduction to Mad Men, believe it's the same show, is when Schmidt on New Girl has his desk at his office.
Yeah.
Because he's also in advertising.
Yeah.
And he makes it like 1/3 the scale to whatever.
John Hamm's characters.
Yeah, I'm looking at that name right now.
John Hamm's breakout role really was Mad Men, which is very much like a drama show. But he loves comedy, and he's done a lot of comedy stuff, and he's terrific.
Yeah.
Also, John Hamm, you know, later the week that this releases, later this week, will be episode 1 of Fargo Season 5 starring John Hamm. This was not an intended tie-in, but, you know.
Don Draper.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Schmidt has a Don Draper replica desk.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Isn't he, like, the only man that works in his office, too?
Yeah, yeah, he is. Yeah. He's a man's world. We're guestless this week, so it's just Nelson and I. Get to hear listen to our beautiful voices for 4 hours.
Yep.
Fargo, man.
Fargo, man.
Fargo, man. This was not, I did not enjoy this. I'm skipping the details right now. I just got to get to my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
This was not a fun watch.
I do not understand this.
It never gave me a chance to get invested. I didn't care about William H. Macy's character. Thought he was a jerk.
He is.
So I lost interest in him. The accent was the only thing keeping me enthralled in this movie.
The accents are terrific.
The actress that plays Marge did a great job. I loved her accent.
But Frances McDormand, wife to one of the Coen brothers. I can never remember which.
Lindsay watched this one with me.
Did she like it?
No, we both ended it and just we were just confused. Like, wait, what? There were some parts I laughed because I know it's a dark comedy.
How many Coen Brothers movies have you seen? I'm gonna read through the titles.
No, I've got the list.
I've got the list right here. It's right
I've
in front
seen
of me.
One. Yes.
Or Where the War Art Thou?
Yes.
What do you think of that?
Love it.
Okay.
Love it.
So what they typically do is they kind of go back and forth between a hard like grit crime and a comedy crime. The comedy ones that they do are probably their most controversial.
Big Lebowski.
I've seen, I think, nearly every single one of theirs. Blood Simple I've seen. I like it a lot. Raising Arizona I've seen. I like it a lot. Miller's Crossing, Barton Fink. I don't love Hudsucker Proxy.
I don't know any of these movies. I've never heard of any of these.
Fargo, I love. Big Lebowski, I've tried to watch like 3 or 4 times.
You'll have to watch it eventually.
Yeah. Or Where Art Thou is just iconic.
It's phenomenal.
The Man Who Wasn't There is incredible.
Never heard of that one.
Intolerable Cruelty is fine. Lady Killers is bad.
Don't know that one.
Paris Je T'aime, I haven't seen. Chacun Son Cinéma, I haven't seen. No Country for Old Men is incredible.
I've not seen that.
We will.
I know this movie. In some of the research I did, there's a lot of parallels between this one and No Country for Old Men.
Yeah, I'd say so.
Again, I've not seen
but
that.
But No Country for Old Men is not a dark comedy.
Great, it's just a dark.
It's just a dark crime movie, and it's incredible. Burn After Reading is absolutely hilarious. Brad Pitt in that is phenomenal.
They did the remake of True Grit.
Yep.
I have not
a
seen
serious
that.
A Serious Man is phenomenal. True Grit's phenomenal. Inside Llewyn Davis, phenomenal. Hail Caesar is phenomenal. Ballad of Buster Scruggs is like a bunch of short movies. I didn't like it that much, but it got great critic response. For me, the Coen brothers are very much like how you see
Nolan.
That's the one.
This is your favorite director team?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. I love their stuff. I've only missed a few of them. Nearly everything I've watched, I've loved and seen multiple times. The Big Lebowski is the big exception. Is the exception. I haven't been able to get through it. I've tried several times.
Because you are the personification of the dude.
Yeah, people tell me regularly that I look like the dude.
I don't know about personality wise, but like, you've got the vibe. You've got the vibe. Do you like White Russians? We're going to have to drink White Russians when we do that episode.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It's a must.
I prefer Black Russians to White Russians. Yeah, it's a drink. It's less cream, so it's not as heavy.
Gotcha. I don't like White Russians. Lindsay and I tried a bunch of different drinks over COVID. Every weekend we did a new cocktail.
Yeah.
That was not a win for us.
White Russians are... So I don't typically like cocktails that feel like you're drinking dessert in the first place. I don't want a lot of sweetness.
I get that.
Black Russians beats the White Russian there. It's also not as rich because it's not as creamy.
We'll do both.
No, I've never been able to get through the Big Lebowski, although I've tried several times. But almost everything else that the two of these brothers have made, I love. There's exceptions. Intolerable Cruelty is just fine. And Lady Killers is bad.
Are any of them inappropriate? Like, do any of them get, like, super graphic? Like, this one had a little bit of violence, but, like, and the language was heavy. But, like, in general, it's not a Kubrick movie. Like, do the Coen brothers ever get, like, very, very filthy?
I don't think any of their movies are any more graphic than this one was.
Oh, okay.
But some of them, because of their different tone, that graphicness might take a more serious note.
That's fair.
Right? Like, Blood Simple is not a dark comedy. It's just a gritty crime movie. So a lot of that same content is going to hit different. The Coen brothers don't make the TV show Fargo, which is a spinoff of this.
They're not attached to it at all, right?
No, but
they have, like, creator, right? Like, they're the creators of Fargo.
They made the movie, and the TV show was a spinoff by a different group of writers. That's an anthology, so each season, new cast, new characters, but they all intermix a lot. And both the movie and the TV show, every season of it says, you know, this is based off of a true story. We've changed the names to protect the people. But also, all that's... And the Coen brothers put that into the movie for two reasons. One, it causes you, the audience, to become invested immediately.
So they say.
It's true, though. It does. Did you look up and see if it was real? Okay. When did you find out that it wasn't based off of a real crime?
My wife told me halfway through.
Okay.
When we were just starting to question, like, where's this movie going? Lindsay just looked up, like, where's this based off of? And then she's like, it's not a real story. Okay. So we were about halfway through.
Yeah. Maybe go back and rewatch it knowing that, and it might change the way you absorb the movie.
Nah.
Because it's a comedy.
Maybe.
And they did that for two reasons. One, because it makes you emotionally invested. But two, it becomes part of the joke of the movie. The Coen brothers do comedy in a very unique way. And I really like them. And it surprises me that you don't.
I had no investment in it. There was never a moment where I'm like, okay, now I've got to see where this goes. It was just like, oh, okay. And there was parts that was just, not just confusing, it was unneeded. The whole, when Marge went to the diner to meet with her old high school friend because she was in the different town.
Yeah.
And he started, we now know later on in the movie that he's lying.
Right.
That has nothing to do with any other part of the storyline. And it's just like, why was that in there? It's already a short movie in comparison to other movies. Like, a lot of the things in this movie added no depth to it, to a movie that already had no depth. And we struggled to get invested with it. And it's like, I laughed at sometimes. I enjoyed the accents. I like Steve Buscemi. I don't know if I said his last name right, but like, I'm very familiar with him. William H. Macy.
Buscemi.
There's not many I've seen with him, but I'm familiar with him. I like those two guys, but just like both of them, I'm just like, I don't really care what happens to either of you.
And most of the main cast in this movie, we will be seeing again in the top 250, almost all of them.
Right. Marge was the only one I was connected to who was the
Frances McDormand is a terrific actress.
She was the hero of the story.
Yeah.
But even her arc was, she was constant. Like, she didn't even have an arc.
No, there's no character arcs in this.
Yeah.
But so here's the thing.
Exactly.
Everything you're saying, I think, are valid criticisms of a drama. This isn't a drama. It's a comedy.
It's a both. It's a both.
It's
you're telling me there's no drama in this movie?
I'm telling you.
The kidnapping, the murders, the mystery, the thievery, that's not drama. That's definitely drama.
I'm telling you, this movie is a comedy.
I know it is, but comedies can have drama. Absolutely. Ace Ventura has drama. It does.
No, it doesn't.
Yes, it does.
No, it doesn't.
Like, yeah.
And I love that movie.
No, it's a great movie. Like, but
no, 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 no. Let me clarify my position, because you've interrupted me a couple times when I'm trying to say it. This movie isn't a drama. All of the stuff that exists in this movie that typically would be used for a drama or to drive tension is intentionally subverted by comedy. That's all on purpose. Now, you might not like that. That's entirely valid. But that is what the creators are trying to do. I think they're successful in that. And that's what steals away the tension. That's what robs the movie of having an emotional investment in what the characters are. It robs the movie of having any kind of character development for these characters. Nobody learns anything. Nobody's a better person at the end. Actually, a really good example is Seinfeld. I know you haven't watched a whole lot of Seinfeld.
The episodes I've seen, though, I've enjoyed.
Yeah. And one of the big important things for Larry David and Jerry Seinfeld in creating that show is nobody learns, nobody's hugging, no character development. And that's why they call it the show about nothing. There's no development for anybody in there. And this movie has a lot of that. And I know, I understand for why a lot of people, that's going to be disappointing or maybe even frustrating. In an action movie, in a drama, you want some of that. You want some character development. You want some driving plot. You want some stakes. Comedies don't need that. And in that way, this movie makes a mockery of those things. Now, I understand why some people aren't going to like that. For me, I really enjoy it.
I've seen, I'm trying to think of some off the top of my head. I know I've seen other dark comedies. I'm trying to think of one.
Anything by the Wayans brothers?
I mean, I know the names, but I don't know if I know any movies off the top of my head from them.
White Chicks, Little Man, you know, those are all black comedies. Barbershop.
Dark comedies, Nelson.
I don't think you're allowed to call them dark.
Dark comedies. This movie didn't have me attached on either side. Like, Where Oh Brother Where Art Thou is a comedy that mm-hmm. has depth. I would say there's drama in that. And maybe your definition of drama is different than mine, but like for me, drama is any.
I would
drama
say what we're finding here is a definition of drama.
Possibly. Yeah. Like drama is any phrase or line that moves the story forward that's not a joke. And there was dialogue in this movie. The whole bar scene in Fargo, I went in knowing it was a dark comedy. I knew that before watching it, but like the dialogue still doesn't, just because it's meant to be satirical, it's meant to be commentary. It's like, still doesn't mean that the joke lands, and that it doesn't mean that it doesn't push the dialogue forward in a dramatic way. It's a dramatic dialogue, whether it's dramatic, like, you know, it's making a dramatic implication.
Yeah, but that's not what drama is. So drama, by definition, is going to involve conflict, strong emotions, seriousness. This movie doesn't have those things. This movie subverts those things.
You're telling me there's no conflict in this movie.
The conflict in this movie is all driven by crime.
Yep.
But crime, again, like, crimes can be dramas. In this particular situation, it's more hijinks.
All right, well.
Also, they leverage the Minnesota nice, that accent, to subvert the tension that should exist for this emotional stuff. There should be, like, you would expect the police chief from a very small town showing up to the crime scene of three dead, one of them a state trooper. You'd expect there to be drama. You'd expect there to be tension. You'd expect there to be grieving and emotion of some sort. Like in Seven, for example, the way that that shows is that the way they subvert that is to show how they've become numb to this over time. But in this, it's more like the tone of voice. You wouldn't know any different if she was showing up to her shift at a dollar store, right? And I think that's very much on purpose.
It's definitely on purpose.
And that's, well, yeah. No, but I mean, like, the reason they do it, the reason it's on purpose is for comedic effect, not dramatic effect. Comedy and drama are at odds when it comes to literature.
Right, but you can have them both in a literature piece or in cinematic piece. Like, sure. They can coexist.
Absolutely. I'm not saying that they can't coexist.
But you're saying in this movie, there's no drama in this movie.
Practically none.
All right, well.
The drama in this movie, in my opinion, is all from Jerry with his father-in-law. And everything else is comedy.
I got the comedic parts where she was bending over by the car wreck in the snow. And
then immediately after, she's like, nah, I'm hungry.
So I got this moment. But there was no investment in this movie for me.
Okay.
And I couldn't.
Are you emotionally invested when you watch Ace Ventura?
Absolutely. 100%. Like, and I'm not just saying that. Like, yes, that movie's nostalgic for me. But in the same sense, like, I care what happens to Ace. none of these characters in this movie got me to the point where I'm like, okay. For instance, I was for sure Marge was going to die when she came across Woodchipper guy.
That would have been dramatic.
I didn't even care because I had no investment ever. Even though she was the hero and she was the only person in the story, I actually did have a little bit of ounce of caring for. even at that point, I'm still going, nah, she's probably going
to
die.
I guess I'm the feminist on this show because I didn't want the female hero of the movie to die.
You're onto something now. Fargo, 1996. And I will say, another thing that did not sell me on this show, as soon as we finished this movie, I was like, okay, maybe the world building will help me sell this movie. Because I know it's not connected to the directors, but I do know it's within the same universe. So I was like, okay, maybe the world building will help me love this movie better. It's literally not connected at all.
What?
The series to the movie.
That's not true.
Like, it's not dynamically connected.
Yes, it is.
One guy finds the briefcase.
Yep.
And there's no crossover characters.
There are.
Okay, so from all the recaps I saw on YouTube, none of them mentioned how they connect to the CV. Oh, none of them mentioned characters, except for the collection of
there's so many things that connect. But
there's small, like, little Easter eggs of things, right?
Yeah, it's an anthology TV show.
But taking place before and after the movie.
Mm-hmm. And in different cities.
Yeah. It wasn't like the Marvels, and then you got Miss Marvel, like, we're like,
oh, wow, directly connected. You chose the two worst movies in the franchise.
Miss Marvel's a TV show. And I'm excited for the Marvels coming out next week.
I think you're one of two people.
My wife and I are very excited for that movie.
Oh, she's the other one. I nailed it.
Absolutely. So I wanted something to commit to, and this movie gave me no weight to, like, I want more of that. I wanted no more of it, just because there was no depth. And the comedy that was there wasn't hilarious. 1996, it runs about an hour and 38 minutes. The directors are the Coen brothers, Joel and Ethan. And this movie is rated R. In 1995, we've reviewed Braveheart in the movie 7. So those movies came out a year before this. And then we've done one movie that came out the year after. Braveheart in 7 came out in 95. 97 was Princess Mononoke. So those are movies we've done so far that are kind of chronologically in release order there. Now, you are more familiar with the actress, but the only two people I recognized on the cast was William H. Macy and Steve Buscemi from multiple different things.
Yeah.
Both were in ER for a little bit.
Buscemi's companion throughout this movie, he's done a bunch of stuff as well.
I did not recognize
him. He almost always plays some kind of East European villain. Have you seen
anything notable?
Have you seen the first John Wick? Oh, he's in that.
Those movies aren't appealing to me.
He's done all kinds of stuff. He usually plays a villain. He also has a bunch of voice acting credits, and I'm sure if you were to look through his
filmography. He did Randall, Monsters, Inc., University. Yeah. He's in Monster House.
No, Buscemi.
Oh, you're talking about
the other guy.
The Buscemi's partner in the movie. I got you. My first introduction to Buscemi was Con Air with Nicolas Cage.
Yeah.
Which is a great movie.
So, Buscemi's in a bunch of top 250 movies.
And Buscemi's in a lot of Adam Sandler movies.
That's right, which is hilarious.
He's in the Adam Sandler verse.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
He's Crazy Eyes in Mr. Deeds, which I watched recently.
Spy Kids 2 and 3.
Yep.
Grown Ups 1 and 2. I mean, like, he's in a Transformers movie.
He's in all kinds
of
stuff.
Pulp Fiction, Reservoir Dogs, Kings of New York. Yeah, so just, those are the two actors. So, the female,
Frances McDormand. Yes.
What else is she in that maybe I would know?
She's in a bunch of, like, she's in pretty much everything the Coen brothers have done. She's married to one of them. I can't remember which. Okay. She also did recently Nomadland, which is about, like, she's a retiree. She's got a terminal illness. She works for Amazon and just travels full time. And that one's fine. It was just a drama, and it wasn't for me. She also was in Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri.
Oh, okay. So I've heard of that.
Yeah. That's in the top 250, I think.
Okay.
That's very good.
That's not a Coen brother movie?
I don't believe so.
Okay. I didn't see it in any of the lists.
She's not exclusively in Coen brother stuff, but almost every Coen brothers thing she's in, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Sort of a side note here, like Killers of the Flower Moon either just came out or is coming out. Like it'll be out by the time this episode airs.
Yeah.
Because I know it comes out in October. Uh-huh. I didn't realize the history of Scorsese, DiCaprio, and De Niro.
Yeah.
I didn't realize just how many movies those three have done.
Oh, yeah.
Or just how many times those have crossed paths either with just Scorsese or the three of them. Like,
they work together constantly.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. I did not realize that. That movie, I want to go see that movie. 3.5 hours long.
Another notable cast in this movie. One of the two prostitutes was the language coach that helped the cast nail that Midwest accent.
Really?
Yeah.
My wife recognized one of the two prostitutes from, I forget what she said, she saw him.
Like, yeah, and she, and so the language coach was the other one.
The other one, okay, yeah, but I didn't recognize either of them.
Yeah, I don't see a lot of prostitutes either.
Oh, huh.
And then when they're in the cabin and he's watching that soap opera and she says that she's pregnant, the male actor in the soap opera, that's Bruce Campbell. He's in all of the Sam Raimi stuff.
Oh, that guy. Okay, okay. The guy at the meatball.
Yeah.
Bruce Campbell. Bruce Campbell's the cameo in the Spider-Man movie.
When you said meatball, I thought pizza ball.
The pizza, that's what I was referring to.
Okay, that's not No Way Home. That's
Far From Home.
That's right. Of Madness.
That's right. It's the Doctor Strange movie, not the Spider-Man movie, which Sam Raimi did. Yeah, that's right. Sam Raimi did do Spider-Man. That's where I'm crossing over.
He
did.
And, and Bruce Campbell is in the Spider-Man Sam Raimi movies as correct. Well.
Okay, yeah. I was crossing wires there. IMDb, this movie is 8.1 out of 10. It's currently 171 out of tip on the top 250. What do you have for the 250 history?
Yeah, so this movie came out right around the same time IMDb did. It debuted at 67, shot up to 15 a year later. Has slowly declined, but seems to get a slight bump each time a new season of the show comes out.
That makes sense. Yeah. The cast for the series of Fargo.
It's incredible.
The amount of actors and actresses that they've got, that they have for the different seasons is nuts. I love Ted Lasso and
Ted Danson, not Ted Lasso.
No, Ted Lasso, the soccer movie. Yeah. The soccer TV show on Apple.
What's that have to do with it?
The actress from Ted Lasso, she's in the newest coming season of Fargo.
Oh, okay.
And my wife and I watched a clip of her doing the accent, North Dakota accent or whatever, and she does a great job, and she's European, so it's interesting. Like, just I'm always impressed by actors doing different accents. Like, you know, just
Tom. Chris Rock was one of the stars for season 4. He did an incredible job.
Is that show also a dark comedy, or is that more of a drama cop show? Like,
no.
Does it still have the same vibe?
They nailed the style. It's incredible.
I wouldn't even say the Coen brothers nailed the style.
I really love the show. I think that it homaged the movie perfectly. While rewatching the movie this time, I was making all kinds of connections with the show that I hadn't seen before. So I'm going to be rewatching the show.
So they're drastically connected.
Yeah.
And I'm just being transparent. Like, I watched a bunch of different YouTube videos.
Are you familiar with the anthology format for shows?
Oh, you mean like there's American Horror Story?
That's one.
There's another one that does. True Detectives anthology? Yeah, the format. Like, each season, it stands alone.
It's an isolated, standalone story. What makes Fargo different is that it all exists in the same universe.
Correct.
And so there are characters that have
aged up or, aged down, like, depending on the generation.
Sometimes you get their backstory. Correct. Sometimes you get what happened later. Often played by different actors because they're different ages. There are characters talked about in the movie that appear in the show and vice versa. And then there are events that transpire in one season that are referenced in other seasons or are foreshadowed.
Well, I know the seasons cross paths a lot.
It all exists in the same universe of this Coen brothers style of crime. There's a game, tabletop role-playing game. So think like, you know, Dungeons & Dragons. Mm-hmm. There's one that's called Fiasco.
Okay.
It's for two to five.
Lupe Fiasco.
2 to 5. Anyway, it's for up to 5 players, I think. And basically, the idea of the game is to recreate a Coen Brothers story. Now, I know that this is your second Coen Brothers movie. But one thing that's pretty consistent with all of them is that their stories are kind of like this intersection of incompetence and avarice. So you have these really ambitious, jealous characters who really want, they think they deserve the world, but they don't have the competency to get it. And so all of them end up dying, but not like tragedy dying, like comedy dying usually. And we see that in this movie. And the less avarice you have, the less likely you are to die, typically in a Coen Brothers movie. So yeah, it's a very specific kind of storytelling. And either you like it or you don't. And
I haven't seen Brother, Where Art Thou? I haven't seen that in years.
Yeah.
But I love it. I love the music.
I think if you were to rewatch it, you'd see some parallels between this and Fargo.
And I mean, that's on the top 250, isn't
it's
it?
Not, Brother, Where Art Thou? In fact,
maybe I'll do that off 250. Maybe I'll pick that one for one of our.
Pull up, because I was looking at it earlier today, when we'll come back to Coen Brothers. So No Country for Old Men, Fargo, and The Big Lebowski are in the top 250.
Only three.
Yeah. True Grit, The Man Who Wasn't There, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, Blood Simple, Raising Arizona, Hudsucker Proxy, and Miller's Crossing all have been. Remember when we did Seven? There's that, what's in the box? I've always thought this was a reference to Miller's Crossing, because in Miller's Crossing, John Goodman's character brings... Oh, speaking of another Adam Sandler Coen Brothers crossover character.
Rob Schneider?
No. Have you seen Mr. Deeds?
I'm not a huge Adam Sandler fan. That one just looked dumb. Is John...
John Goodman's in a few different Coen Brothers. Is he in
a bunch of...
Yeah. So John Turturro...
Yeah.
...is in Miller's Crossing.
No Brother, Where Art Thou?
Yeah, No Brother, Where Art Thou? You know, he's in a few different Coen Brothers. And John Goodman's character brings him a box that Turturro thinks Ahead is in. And so whenever I've heard that what's in the box, I've always thought it was a reference to that, which I thought was weird because, like, John Turturro doesn't sound like the way that that line is always done. And then I watched Seven and I was like, oh, I get it now. I'm confusing the two movies. Anyway, so that's that. So we will be coming back to Coen Brothers with No Country for Old Men and The Big Lebowski. If you'd like to see us cover one of those other Coen Brothers movies, join our Patreon and put it in the off 250 suggestion box.
Yeah, I'd love to talk about Brother Art Thou.
Soggy Bottom Boys.
Yeah.
Hot damn, it's the Soggy Bottom Boys.
The soundtrack to that movie is great. Like, I grew up in a house that sang a lot of bluegrass. And so, like, a lot of the actual soundtrack has other bluegrass artists on it that aren't even in the movie.
So Skaggs.
Yeah, Alison Krauss. All people I grew up listening both to and stuff. Yeah, they're both fantastic.
Both of the Blues Brothers people.
No, that's Belushi.
I'm pretty sure we named them all.
Belushi and Candy and...
John Candy is in Blues Brothers.
Yeah.
Man, I love that movie.
Blues Brothers is a great movie. I've not seen the second one.
Or is that in the top 250?
Blues Brothers is not in the top 250. We're not that lucky. Rotten Tomatoes, 94%, 92% on the audience. So that's all the rankings and stuff. Do you have the budget for this movie?
I certainly do. This movie cost $7 million to make in 1996. We've had roughly 100% inflation since then, so that puts it at $14 million today. Also, it kind of helps you understand anytime money is talked about in this movie, you double that number, you understand how much money they're talking about.
Yeah, I mean, that checks out. Like, this movie was a cheap project. They intentionally tried to keep the budget light.
What do you think of the cinematography? There's nothing too crazy there. Yeah. I think you know, the accent itself is kind of a character of this movie.
Yeah.
And I think that's big, kind of foreshadowing to what, you know. I think that's a big reason it's on the top 250. It's just the voice work in this is really incredible. I agree with
that. And, like, the location is very much an actor as well.
Yeah.
Like, the snow, the wintry elements and stuff plays a part in the movie enough to where you'd be like, yeah, this movie would be completely different if it was in the summertime. Like, yeah, like, just the whole movie, we were waiting to, like, for them to go, like, okay, when... Just give me something. And it just left us feeling empty, which is a bummer. Like, well, I'll sum it up at the end. But so, Nelson, do you have any of our Patreon subscribers, our peanut gallery, as we like to call them, did they have anything to say about this movie?
No comments. However, 100% of people that responded to the survey said it would be in their top 250.
Nice. Okay.
Good. They've got better taste than you.
That doesn't take much. I'm a movie liker. However, just starting this conversation here, I couldn't come up with too much dialogue in this movie to break down.
Yeah, there really isn't a lot.
I have a couple larger, like, situations that maybe present a scenario. Mm-hmm, but, like, dialogue-wise, besides Marge and her husband, the stamp guy...
Yep.
Everyone's dirtbags.
Yeah.
I don't take anything that they say with a grain of salt. Like,
No. You do, like, take it all with a grain of salt.
No, I don't do anything with salt. Actually, that was a vague statement. I take no salt with anyone's statements. No, I'm just kidding.
I take everybody at their word, including the scumbags.
No salt. but, like, we never found out why the dude had money problems. Let me go back to my page here. Which you get? I get that it's not a straight up drama, and you say there's no drama at all. But, like, there are aspects of this movie that there's gaping holes that left me going, none of this makes sense, so I'm not attached to any of it. Why did Jerry have to steal money? He seemingly loved his wife and kids. He wasn't unfaithful to our knowledge. He wasn't, like...
He was in the whole $600,000.
Right, we know how much, but we don't know why. We don't know if it was a life or death situation. Like,
but is it I think what the Coen brothers are doing there.
Was he trying, like, was his motives justified? I was listening to a podcast. Well, no, it was a YouTube streamer. And he was talking how, like, sometimes to reach a goal, if it's life or death, rules get broken. Maybe sometimes laws, but sometimes, like, if it's life or death situation, you may not be going the speed limit if you got to get to the hospital a little quicker. Again, not justifying it, but, like, sometimes rules need to be broken to achieve a goal if life's on the line.
Yeah.
But in this movie, you never know if the reason he's got this debt, was it justifiable? Well, there's no emotional attachment
on that for a second
to his faults,
I think the which Coen makes brothers...
me not necessarily rooting against the actual kidnappers. I'm like, well, maybe he deserves to have his wife kidnapped. And like, I don't know. Should I be rooting for Jerry? Should I be like, I just needed a little bit more depth for me to go, okay, now I can hold on to something and watch this play out.
I disagree.
Okay, and that's fine. Not a surprise.
I think the Coen brothers knew that they didn't need a reason for him to be $600,000 in the hole and for his family not to know about it. There's really two possible reasons that I can think of that somebody would be $600,000 in the hole and not have told their spouse. One of those is likely gambling debts, which I think is the case with Jerry. The other
with what inferences? Like, what gives you that?
Because the other meaning? Option that I can think of would be medical bills, like we see in Breaking Bad. So let me ask you this. Do you think that Walter White's behavior in Breaking Bad is justified?
I've never seen Breaking Bad.
Selling meth to pay for cancer treatment. His own.
I only know what you just told me about it.
Cooking, like, and selling meth to pay for cancer treatment. Yeah.
But like, why? Like, I don't know why he hasn't tried other alternatives. Like, I don't know if it's justified just because I don't know
quick what money. Led him to. He's a history. He's a science teacher. He's like, this is to make quick money. I'll be able to pay off my medical treatments.
He didn't try any other alternatives before going to the quick one first.
Nope.
I would say there are other...
Okay. What possible situation can you conceive of that legitimizes arranging for your spouse to be abducted rather than talk to her about the debts you have?
Money laundering at the business, like at his car shop, because it is a family dealer.
It's his right. father-in-law's car shop.
So it's a family business. So it doesn't have to be gambling. It doesn't have to be a medical thing. Like
that would be his money.
No. Okay, the whole tag situation, I assume that was part of it. Like, there were, like, those tags that person kept calling to get, they need the VIN numbers, the VIN numbers.
Yeah.
I was thinking maybe that's connected.
No, it's because he's fraudulently getting rid of cars.
And wouldn't that lead to him losing money somewhere? Like, so maybe his family's not in debt, but he's lost $600,000 of the company money, so the company's in debt. But there's no real reason to it. Like,
I can't think of a possible situation that would plausibly justify arranging to have your wife abducted.
I can't either. I would never do
that.
Then
what does it matter what he owes the money for?
It's a one-sided character.
Yeah.
Like, which I think you can have characters with depth in a dark comedy. Like, I think you can achieve a dark comedy and still have characters that have a little bit more deeper meaning. Like, again, maybe that wasn't their intention, and clearly it wasn't. Like,
okay.
But just like,
let me ask you this.
These are the things that kept me from getting attached.
Sure.
Like, I needed more.
In Star Wars A New Hope, how do lightsabers work?
The Kyber crystals.
In Star Wars A New Hope.
You can't ask me that now because I know how they work.
It's never discussed, though.
No.
It's never explained. We don't really understand Obi-Wan's motives. We don't understand Luke's motives.
For using a lightsaber?
For a lot of the behavior.
I don't need to know how a gun works for it to be a main point of a movie.
Okay, but
the whole movie revolves around, dude's got a debt, dude needs to hire a solution to solve it. Like, the debt is a way bigger factor in this movie than a lightsaber is in Star Wars.
No.
Lightsabers have an impact, but the lightsabers don't move the story forward.
Yes, they do.
No, they don't.
Yeah. My point is, MacGuffins don't need explanations.
Well, I don't want Jerry to be a MacGuffin. I want him to be a main character.
No, the debt's the MacGuffin.
Know how to communicate more what I'm trying to say than, like, but just, I needed more depth to these characters.
Yeah,
this movie was one-layered, and it wasn't, and maybe if it was funnier, maybe that would have been like, okay, I can not, but like, the comedy wasn't even, it wasn't bad. But the comedy, well, I know I'm breaking your heart. Like, I chuckled a couple times because she's morning sickness. I thought that was funny where she's out investigating the murder and stuff on the street. I was like, okay, that's clever. I loved how she always had to eat.
Yeah.
Like, and I loved the stamp comment that her husband made. Everything else in the movie, I'm just sitting there motionless.
You were waiting for Gallagher to come out with his hammer and smash a watermelon.
That's not, no, I don't need slapstick. This movie didn't need slapstick for me to like it. But it just, everything was just weak. And I'm sorry. Like,
you don't need to apologize.
No, like, well, the acting was good. Like, acting was good. Like, it wasn't anything that, like, I didn't think
the acting was terrific.
Right. Like, yeah, that wasn't the issue. Like, production, great. The setting was great. Like, just like the camera work.
Yeah.
I didn't notice it any worse. Like, it wasn't bad. Like, it was literally just the storyline. I couldn't.
Okay. Well, coming back to.
Let's bring it back.
Coming back to you saying that you needed a plausible reason why somebody might do this. I mean, I think.
That's one of the things that would have helped.
If you owed $1.2 million and felt like you couldn't talk to your family about it, I can imagine feeling like this is my best option. Is crime.
Yes, I'm going with you so far.
Going with what you were originally saying, you were implying that in certain situations, the ends justify the means.
Right.
I strongly disagree with that line of thinking.
Okay. Which is not a surprise.
I know. I think I take a very principled position there. The means themselves have to be justified on their own merit. We've recently seen some atrocious things happening over in the East from both Hamas and the Israel Defense Force. In both cases, either side are doing what their own religions teach them they have to do, which is make sure that innocent bystanders do not become casualties of their acts of war. In this case, the ends, which is they both have very strongly opposed ends, don't justify their means of the slaughter of innocents. That's not to say that this is equivalent, but it is the same concept of, well, this is the end I need, and so these are the means I'm going to have to do to get there, and while it's not ideal, you know, I don't have a whole lot of options. When it comes to speeding to get to the hospital because you have an emergency, I don't think that that's a situation of ends justifying means. I think that's a situation of, I mean, I have hold very low value for speed limits to begin with.
Right. But in blatant terms, you're breaking a law to achieve something of greater value.
I speed all the time.
But that's not the question.
Right.
I'm not arguing that. I'm just saying, like, but that's, I'm just comparing, I don't even want to get in what's going over in the Middle East, but like, but and compare that to anything, but like, but just this idea of like having your wife kidnapped to pay a debt.
Yeah.
Without us knowing who's collecting the debt.
Right.
Versus.
Or even if there is a debt. We don't know for a fact there is a debt.
That's right. Versus.
But I think it's reasonable to presume there is.
Versus I'm willing to speed if I've got to get someone to the hospital and that's the best way.
Or if I really want a cup of coffee.
Or you know, there's a line at the car wash and I want to make sure. Like, it adds depth to it. Versus like, okay, sir, why are you speeding? I don't know. Sir, why were you speeding? My wife's in the back. She got her leg cut off because she was mowing the yard because I was inside playing video games. There's immediately more depth to the story than just speeding. So just having that little bit more of knowledge, again, both broke the law, but at the same time, like now it's like, okay, there's more to, we have more to the story. So just having that little bit more about Jerry fills out his character. None of these characters, even Marge, there was pieces missing. And it just, I keep repeating, so I'm not trying to dwell on this fact.
Yeah, I think the movie would have been better if we could have seen the night that their child was conceived.
No, I'm saying I wanted to see the stamp that her husband had. Like,
or maybe if we got to watch him cook those eggs.
The movie
took place over the course of a week, and we didn't see every gritty detail, and I wanted to see Norm in the bathroom.
You trying to bait me, or do you seriously miss my point? I feel attacked this whole episode, so I don't know whether you're actually just trying to dig at me, or if...
Jeff, what's the first thing I said when I walked into the room?
Any beer?
No.
I don't remember.
Don't do that to me. I said, Jeff, I love you, and I am so glad I'm
because
doing this show with
you. Because you knew you were going to tear into me. And I even said, I was like, usually when you start a conversation like that...
No, then, that's not why I said it. I said it because, Jeff, I love you, and I love doing this show with you.
I ain't going anywhere.
It's unrelated, I couldn't disagree with you more on this movie.
And that's fine. That's fine. I just...
Let's talk for a second about Jerry as a sleazy car salesman.
Yes.
And he has that couple in there.
We don't even get to see much of. Because all of the interaction we see him
that
at
one
the,
scene
all
and,
the interaction
oh,
we see with him at the car dealership, he's distracted. So we don't even get to see him doing his actual job.
No, there's one scene where you get to see that he's not distracted.
Right
at the
beginning,
couple in
he's
there.
They're in his office, right.
And that's where I wrote down here in my notes, sleazy car sales techniques. Yeah. Do you think that that actually happens? Or do you think that's just a stereotype, doesn't actually happen?
Specifically in the car industry, I know things have changed recently, you know, with a lot more online sales. So specifically car salesmen, maybe that specific conversation doesn't happen as much, but like, yes, salesmen in general, I have a hard time dealing with salesmen because not all of them, maybe not even most of them, motives are ulterior. I'd rather buy from someone who doesn't have a commission off it than I would if someone knowing that they're trying to make a sale.
All right. Well, like, you know,
like, don't sell me up just because you benefit from it. Sell me up because you believe in what you're selling.
One of the things we do on this show, apart from talking about world film movies, is solve the world's problems. Yes. So how do you think, because I don't have an answer to this, and I'm just, I really don't. I agree that commission and sales creates perverse incentives for salesmen that
be cheap or cheat people out.
Yeah, which negatively impacts the brand that they represent.
Right.
How do you solve that?
Like,
how do you still incentivize salesmen to sell a lot?
Well, the fault is not the incentive. Like, I'm all about incentivizing and rewarding for people. If I owned a company and I was able to reward my employees for doing a good job, and I'm all for that. I've never done that, and I don't know if that'll ever be like my future, but like, yeah, I've been in places where because of my good work, I've been rewarded and it felt good and it did motivate me to work better.
Yeah.
I don't think the issue with commission is the commission itself. I think it's the fact that we're all inherently bad.
Right. No, people are going to pursue incentives when you put them out there. Yeah.
So the system's not bad. We're bad. Vaguely, like in general. And so it's an easy system to corrupt.
Okay.
Like, it's a very easily manipulated system.
Apart from...
If everyone was honest, then it would be, like, obviously, in that ideal world that I live in when I sleep, it's easier to go, okay, if I know this car salesman really has my dollar value in mind, not his, then I don't need to ask as many questions. I know I can just trust him. I also know that's not the case.
Yeah. I mean,
the first time I mention power windows, he's going to go, well, actually, we got this one right down the road that actually... So just like, I know that they're always going to have an answer for my... next thing I mentioned that's going to be an upgrade. It's like,
sure. Well, you know, if James, as James Madison said, if all men were angels, no government would be necessary.
Amen.
Now I, you know, have my issues. You love
James Madison.
I hate.
He's your favorite president.
He was a president
of all the James's Madisons.
Yeah. Of all the Madisons, he was the Jamesest. Now, obviously, I take my qualms with that claim, right? That the government fixes the fact that men aren't angels because who do we make the government up of? That's right.
yes!
Men who aren't Nailed angels. It. So I don't think the solution is a top-down government one. I don't even understand how a top-down government one could fix that. Now, ideally, yes, the hearts of man would be such that they'd just be honest.
Right.
But if that's the case, then you don't need the incentive structure to begin with.
That's true. That's true. It would. Yeah, that's true.
So like what possible way do you encourage?
I don't think you need fault to not reward someone. If we lived in a sinless world where people were honest, like there's still value in going, you know what? I thought about you today. Here's this. Like,
right. But that's like, not what commission is.
No, that's true. Commission isn't a bonus.
Commission is, hey, you sold X many, and for that you get X additional dollars right, okay. on top of your salary.
I am merging the two, yeah.
And so I think commission is a very sensible way to drive sales.
Correct. It makes sense.
But any incentive structure, people will look for opportunities to exploit the incentive structure. Yeah. So even if the car dealership wants honest salesmen, that commission structure is going to attract dishonest salesmen. And I don't know how you fix that. I don't know if there is a solution for that.
Carfax, no.
J.D. Power and Associates.
Carvana, where you buy the car from the box online.
That's just, I think it's likely true that car salesmen exploit incentive structures and commission structures. I don't know how you fix that, and I think that that's a really difficult problem. Now, again,
I'd recommend that you find a car dealer that you have a personal relationship with.
Ideally, yeah.
My wife and I bought our last 5 vehicles from the same people. We know them personally.
Because so like, then they have a relationship incentive.
Right. To be honest with us, they know, like, we'll come back if they treat it. Like, it's like,
yeah.
Again, I don't know if that solves that issue, but for me, it was intentional about going, I'm making a long-term commitment with you. As long as if I'm in this area, you're going to be my guy. I want to let you know, I will come back. And it's like, and
if I don't feel you've screwed me over,
it's been gold so far. So like,
and, to be fair
and,
though,
and because that we have this outside of the work relationship too, like that we now, like when we see, hey, I like we've created this, not friendship, yeah. but like this camaraderie.
Yeah.
And we had this out of.
Now I'm not saying that this is what's happening with your particular guy. But I do know that a lot of car salesmen do use that and leverage that.
Oh, 100%. Right? Yeah, I'm not going to argue
and
that.
And so it's less even that they don't screw you, but more that at the end of the transaction, you don't feel like you've been screwed.
I'm trying to think of what other places. Can't remember the last time I've interacted with a salesman. Best Buy used to be commission, and maybe they still are. I don't go to Best Buy as much as I used to anymore. Physical music is not a thing much anymore. That's where I used to get my CDs.
Yeah.
I bought a TV from there recently, but I don't know.
I bought my last TV there too.
I didn't get the vibe that it was commission based.
Might not be.
I know things have changed because of places like Amazon, like where they've really cut out the middleman, a lot of those things. So yeah, like I'm trying to think of other areas where I've encountered a...
You have a mortgage on this house too.
That's true. That's very true. Yes. And we just recently refinanced.
Try to upsell.
I very much felt like a number.
You are, and
I am a number, but like there was very little. Every time I called, I got a different person. I was never talking to the same person once. And I'm happy with our rate. Like I'm happy with the product they gave.
Yeah.
And with like, and but just every time I called, it was someone different.
Yeah.
And then I would get a call every other day. Hey, just want to know if you got any updates from a different person in a different state. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, it felt impersonal, which
it is.
It is, but it's also like, it's banking, and all my bank tellers, I'm old-fashioned though. I love going to the bank. Hey, Jeff. So just,
and
like,
I think my
expectation was banking. Like, I'm going to get this personal service.
Yeah.
It was still good service, but it was just not personal.
Well, and here's the thing, right? You could have gotten your mortgage with the local bank.
Correct. Yeah.
You would have paid more. But what would you get with that? You'd get that hometown. They know your name.
That's true.
Right?
Yeah.
So it's as Thomas Sowell says, there's no solutions. There's only trade-offs.
No, I did not shop around. I'm really bad when it comes to this stuff. So maybe I should have like, I refinanced with the person we already had our mortgage through. So for me, like, and it was an easier transition.
Knowing who you got it through and knowing when you got it, you probably wouldn't have gotten a whole lot better anywhere else.
No. So for me, like there wasn't much, I didn't do a lot of like in-depth study when it came to it. It's like, I didn't even think about outsourcing. I was just like, look at those rates. Oh, cool.
You guys got mortgages there?
Yeah. How much? Oh yeah, that would be. Okay, yeah, let's do it. Like,
yeah.
And one, yeah, I obviously have to discuss it with my wife. And I talked to a couple people in my life that are financially
literate,
responsible and stuff that advised me on some things. And then I did go back with some questions and stuff. So maybe for me, the mortgage was a bad example because I didn't do much shopping around. It's just not my, which there's some negligence there on my part, which I'm aware of. But yeah, that would be the last time I dealt with a salesman.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're right.
Yeah, and the way a business sets up its incentive structure, you know, people are smart. People are going to look for their best return for energy spent. And for a salesman on commission, best return for energy spent is to not be entirely honest with the customer.
Yeah.
I believe it. I've been a salesman several times. I'm pretty good at it, and I don't like it unless I'm selling something I really believe in.
I did insurance.
Yeah?
Loved the guy I worked for. Like, I'll refer anyone to him.
Selling insurance, yeah.
I only lasted 90 days, so.
Your 90-day review, they said no thanks?
It was like, we need to change, like, something needs to change or we'll give you 2 weeks to go find something else.
I refuse to change.
I was like, I don't see me being able to change.
Yeah.
And it was a great, honest conversation. And because of that, I even more deeply respect him.
Yeah.
And he's a good businessman. Like, okay, it wasn't the organization I struggled with. It was the work mentality.
Yeah. I don't like working either.
The work medium. So yeah. So I didn't have a bad experience with the company.
Yeah.
It was my personal experience with that medium of work. Mm-hmm. I would refer him to anyone. I'm not going to say it on air, but like wonderful people. Wonderful.
Here's a glowing endorsement, but we won't tell you before.
This episode is sponsored by Redacted.
Oh, I love Redacted. Redacted handled
check
my
the
last
notes below.
Insurance. Moving forward on the plot of the movie, when they abduct the wife. You know, Jeff, that's a really horrific situation.
Yeah, as far as abductions go, that was pretty bad.
Yeah, you know what would have made that situation a lot easier for her to navigate?
A cell phone.
A cell phone, yeah. If it wasn't 1996 and she'd had a cell phone, that would have.
Did the movie take place in 96 or was it set in an earlier time?
It was set a couple years earlier, but it's
okay.
Basically
it's 90s. The 90s.
Yeah.
Okay.
A cell phone could have helped.
Because I know it's a town that's a little behind, like it's a slow town.
Yeah.
So like, I got this vibe that they were kind of stuck in the 80s, but I didn't know if they were 90s just stuck in the 80s because of resources or if it was actually set a little bit earlier. So I couldn't
set in the 90s.
Okay.
Early 90s.
Okay.
And keep in mind, like early 90s are basically late 80s. Right.
What would make a difference in this abduction?
self-defense would have been a great deterrent to would-be abductors.
That's true.
She did try to defend herself. You got to give her that. But I feel like she could have been better equipped, and the house could be better equipped for a defense-type situation scenario. What do you think, Jeff?
Thought you were leading up to something.
Krav Maga and nunchucks?
Yeah. No, I mean, self-defense, I mean, I can't think of a reason not to learn it if that's something you want to pursue.
No, self-defense is a whole suite of things. It could be techniques. So,
well, what's the question then? What were you asking?
How might the house have been better equipped to defend somebody?
With self-defense.
How do you equip a house with self-defense?
Have you ever seen Smart House, Disney Channel? Wait, I thought you were...
Home Alone?
But I was just getting in to describe self-defense, and then you said, no, then you stopped me.
No, so I apologize. So self-defense can be things like Krav Maga and other martial arts.
Right.
There's other self-defense, though.
Right. You're baiting me. You are baiting me, aren't you? You are. I... Guns, Nelson, guns. You want me to say guns? Guns.
Guns.
They should have guns in them.
They should have guns in them.
Guns. Yeah. Yes, guns.
A gun that she knows how to operate would have entirely changed the course of this movie.
Yes. Assuming that she was learned on it, absolutely. I'm not anti-gun.
No, I know.
A gun in the home, I have no issue with.
The only time we see guns used in this movie... Well, that's not true. I was going to say the only time it's used is by bad guys. Francis McDormand shoots the one guy once in the leg. I don't think she was aiming for his leg either. He was just far away. I'm not saying she was a bad shot. It's hard to hit a moving target at a distance.
Yeah, no, go. Yeah, I mean, but again, if you're baiting me, I don't think a person needs a nuke. So, like, I think there is, if the gun in your house is strictly for self-defense, doesn't have to be a machine gun, a Tommy gun. It doesn't have to be, I know we got in the whole AR military, whatever. It doesn't have to be something, like a handgun would suffice.
Yeah.
Or a shotgun.
Yeah.
Like shotguns, you know, obviously shotguns can, you know, dual well hunting and home defense. But that's just my opinion. I know people that have more guns than that, and that's fine.
Yeah.
That's not my issue. And they're all well trained with it, so like I trust them. Like,
yeah.
But just I...
Speaking of shotguns, currently legal in the state of Ohio, Mossberg 590, which is a small shotgun that you have in two hands, looks like a sawed-off, strongly recommend.
Wait.
590 Shockwave by Mossberg. This episode brought to you by... great for home defense. Also handguns.
Also?
Great for home defense.
Slingshots?
Yeah. And
slingshots?
Honestly, and here's the thing, too.
A baseball bat?
Right? If she was, say, like an MMA, female MMA level
combatant... Ronda Rousey.
She would have had a chance against two large men with weapons because they came in the house with melee weapons. Yeah. But she's a, you know, your average housewife. And knowing self-defense for anybody is absolutely important, right? Melee self-defense, absolutely important. But I don't think her knowledge of melee self-defense in this situation would have been sufficient. She still needs a weapon, even if it's pepper spray. Right, you need something. You need to be able to protect yourself. A handgun, I think, is a really great tool for self-defense, especially for women. It is a power equalizer. Jerry goes to his father-in-law, and the father-in-law says, hey, this is great. The numbers check this out. It looks like a real sweet deal. What's your finder's fee? He is really put on the back foot here. Like, no, you know, I don't want a finder's fee. I want the principal. I'll pay you back, plus interest. I'd go 1/1 prime. Do you know what that means? 1/1 prime?
No. That whole conversation.
Over your head?
Yeah.
Okay. Prime is the average interest rate on the market right now. Okay. So when your mortgage company starts calling you and say, hey, rates have dropped, it might be a good time for you to refinance. What they mean by that is the prime rate is now lower than when you signed your mortgage. So when he's saying, I'll go 1/1 prime, 1%. So if prime rate right now is 3%, he'll do 4. If prime rate's 15, he'll do 16. From his position of not having a lot of money, 1/1 prime, that's a significant interest repayment for him. From their position of having, they're asking for $750,000, 1% over prime, as they said, is bank rates. Like, this is not huge money. And he says, if I wanted bank rates on $750,000, I'd go to Midwest Federal. And then later he says, if I'm only getting bank interest, I want complete security. I want FDIC. The reason that you don't get security at higher interest rates is because you're taking a bigger gamble. If I'm not taking a big risk on this, then I want 100% securities. Now, I don't like FDIC securities. I think we shouldn't even have that. But that was the conversation being had there. Because Jeremy has no bargaining power in this. And now they have all of the information on this deal. And he says, Jerry, I don't want to cut you out of this. But if you refuse to take a finder's fee, I'm going to go after this anyway.
So would a finder's fee, like, would Jerry have made it out better if he took a finder's fee versus just doing the 1%? Or was the father-in-law trying to, yes, by doing a finder's fee over a percentage? Or would it have been both? Would it have been a finder's fee? Like, was that whole conversation I didn't understand, like, was, because it sounded like the father-in-law was trying to hook him up, but Jerry didn't. Like, I was reading more on the tone of the conversation than I was the dialogue.
Maybe we were wrong entirely, like, about it being debt. $750,000 is pretty close to what he was saying he needed in money.
Right.
Maybe what he was saying he needed, that $600,000 sum, that's the difference between what he had and $750,000. Maybe he only had a few thousand in savings. So maybe what he wanted this total amount of money for was just for this investment he planned.
He wanted to
be independent of his father-in-law, to be able to provide for his wife and son. I still don't think that justifies having your wife abducted, of course.
No, so
maybe it wasn't debt at all. Maybe there wasn't a money problem. It was I want to make this investment on a parking lot.
And he thought easy money, a ransom. It was, but then it looked like the father-in-law was all interested in doing this.
But the father-in-law was going to do the investment himself. He's like, this is a way for me to make money. If I give you a finder's fee, and one of the things Jerry said in that conversation, it's a finder's fee is what, 10%? And nobody in the room disagreed with him. So 10%, he's getting that most $75,000,
yeah.
Right? Which is still significant. That's big money. You double that, and that's what it's worth today, $150,000. That's big money, but it's not what he was looking for.
Maybe it wasn't debt, yeah.
It's not what he was looking for. He wanted this to be his, and I get it. But also, you've just given them a great portfolio on an investment they can make, and you're refusing the finder's fee. They're going to move on it. That's a risk you took when you gave him the folder in the first place.
That almost makes me like, if that's the case, if it wasn't debt, if he wanted to invest and he just needed the money up front,
yeah,
that makes me like Jerry even less.
Yeah.
But that would fulfill that story then.
Yeah.
That would fulfill that, like, there'd be no question then about that money.
I think that is our answer. And I think, so
that makes sense
to me. From what I know from watching Coen Brothers movies, all the information's there if you're watching, if you're paying attention. And so I think that is our answer. I don't think it is debt. I don't think it's gambling debt. I've always thought it was gambling debt. But if we look at that conversation closely,
he needed the money for a startup or an investment.
Yeah,
there's a little bit of depth there to him then. Mm-hmm. But again, he's a scumbag.
You're right.
Well, the villains are scumbags.
One of the things the Coen brothers do to
the son is completely emotionless through the whole thing.
Yeah.
It's just, yeah.
No. The son's
a little bit. But then the next conversation, he's talking to Jerry. If my mom got kidnapped, I would be hysterical for days. And it just seems like it was just that first interaction. Then the next one, the son's like, oh, okay. You'll be back soon? Oh, okay. Just like, I don't know. It was just emotional. Sure. Just everything, but everyone in this movie was emotionless.
Yeah, because that's Midwestern.
Happy? Well, what's the phrase? Midwestern nice.
Midwest nice, yeah. Yeah, it's very Scandinavian culture where you just kind of suppress all that. Mm. You keep your head up. You smile. You nod. Go along to get along.
What were you going to say?
One thing that the Coen brothers do really, really well, right? That intersection, I was talking about Fiasco. It's a really great game.
The game, yeah.
Yeah, I love that game. It's so much fun. And
can you find it on Amazon?
Yep, it's linked below.
Link below, sweet.
I play it all the time. It's terrific. It's a storytelling game, and it draws out what the Coen brothers are really good at, which is that intersection of blind ambition and incompetence. Whenever you're looking, what they do really, really well is show what happens when you take shortcuts. This movie is all about people taking shortcuts.
Yeah. And deceiving someone to get ahead of the other person. Yeah.
Yeah. Or, you know, that Buscemi's sidekick shooting the cop as soon as things get even a little bit intense. Everybody keeps taking shortcuts. And what does that get them? It gets them killed. Buscemi hides $750,000 basically to cut his sidekick out. And then refuses to give his sidekick half of what the car is worth, even though he knows he's got that money. He should have been just like, you know what? You're right. Here's half the car's value. Because he knows he's got all that money. The guy kills him. And now that money's just...
Well, until...
Until season one of Fargo, the TV show. Linked below. Check it out. It's so good. What the Coen brothers do really, really, really well across their movies is show what happens when you try to take shortcuts.
I would agree with that. Absolutely, I agree with that.
Or not necessarily show, but create cautionary tales.
Now, do you would you say they balance it out with the character like Marge, though? Like, Marge is great. I think she, if she wasn't in it, this movie maybe would have been closer to a one for me.
Oh, yeah.
But
yeah.
Marge saved this movie for me to where it is now. Would you say that she balances it out completely where to where the fact that, like, she shows that opposite side? Or,
yeah.
Okay, how so for her specifically? How would you say she, like...
Here's
like,
a terrific example, and it's one of my favorite scenes in this movie. And you criticize it, and I think that your criticism has merit, but I think this is why the scene's important. Marge is in the Twin Cities for work, and she's like, hey, Mike, you know, you called me up the other night. Let's meet for lunch at the Radisson. And he makes a move on her. And she says, you know what? I would be more comfortable if you sat across from me. She does that because she is not short-sighted. If she had taken a shortcut, all right, she could have slept with Mike. Nobody would know. Norm doesn't need to know. It's in the Twin Cities. This could never come up again. And she knows... She's got, in economic terms, we call it low time preference. Or perhaps it's high time preference. I can never remember which one.
She's not moving real fast.
I always get them confused. But basically, she knows that if she's patient, much better things pay off in the future. Yep. She values her marriage way more. You know, and that's a choice. Yep. And it's a conscious choice. Right? She could have even just, like, when Mike moves and sits next to her and he's like, hey, do you mind if I sit next to you? She could have just been like, I know my boundaries for me and my husband, but sure, you can sit next to me. That's fine. But no, she draws a line. I love that scene. And I do think it creates a counterbalance to the ambition that you see with the other guys, right? Like you see the criminals on multiple occasions hiring prostitutes. That's very much the exact opposite of what she's demonstrating. She is a virtue.
I definitely think... The negative side is more prevalent with the other characters, like being that she's only the one.
Right.
Like,
I would say
she is the silver lining, but there's minimal silver lining in this movie.
I think everybody else in Brainerd, like, I don't see anybody in Brainerd making, because one of the things when they see the murder, she's like, nobody in Brainerd could have done this. And the other guy's like, no. All the other police officers, when they talk to Norm, it's very respectful. Right. And it's like, hey, I thought you were heading up to the lake. Oh, no, it's not to the afternoon. Hey, Norm, how are those paintings going? Like, they're respecting the boundary that Norm, like, you are my boss's wife, and I'm sort of my boss's husband. And even though you have a traditionally female role, and you know she's got a traditionally male role, I'm not going to interject myself in your marriage and try to subvert you. Like, I think that, like, these are good people. You know what I mean? I got a line here, and this is Marge's line in the movie. She says this to the guy that she shoots. So that was Mrs. Lundegaard on the floor in there. And I guess that was your accomplice in the wood chipper. And those three people in Brainerd. And for what? For a little bit of money? There's more to life than a little bit of money, you know? That's the closest thing we get in this movie to a truth claim.
Yeah.
And it really sums up the, you guys are taking shortcuts for money.
Yeah. All three of them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you don't see much the, what's his name? Hold on, I want to say it correctly.
Jerome?
Shep Proudfoot.
Yeah, Shep Proudfoot. Yeah.
So, like, he's also another one, like, obviously he's doing some shady business, but, like...
He's ex-con.
Yeah, and, like, he was the connection to the two
I know a guy who knows the stuff. Guy, yeah. Basically, yeah.
But, yeah, I think he's the one, he makes it out of all this.
Yeah.
Like, everyone else kind of...
But he also wasn't benefiting from it.
That's true.
He didn't have a finder. He was just a contact,
yeah. That line is great. He's another one where, like, he wasn't doing anything wrong, but, like, you also didn't see him trying to, he didn't short, he was just, he did his role. Well, I guess I was trying to rebound.
He beats the crap out of Buscemi.
Yeah.
And says, don't put me back in prison.
Again, but never once, never, like, trying to manipulate for more money or, well, now I want to cut. Now, like,
Did you think he was going to kill Buscemi in that scene? The first time I watched it, that's what I thought was going to happen. Were you surprised when you saw Buscemi in a wood chipper?
Nothing in this movie surprised me. I couldn't predict it, but, like, nothing happened and I went, oh, just minimal reaction. I was just like, oh, broken record. You'd be like, I didn't really care what happened to him. So for me, just like, oh, he got, okay, whatever.
Yeah. So, yeah, so
I, and even with the
last
wife,
week like, with aliens, that's how I felt.
And even
with, 2 weeks ago,
even with the wife, like obviously innocent. For me, this whole movie as a whole, there was something about it that kept me from wanting to invest in anyone. Even if Marge, which if Marge would have seen a demise, I still would have written just neutral to my reaction. Like, oh, okay. Yeah. Like, you know, like my morals wise, not for it, but like, in, but entertainment wise, I'm like, oh, okay. Like nothing in this movie caught me off guard. I think my biggest reactions came from some of the comedic moments. I didn't have any like shock moments. Nothing surprised me when it came to storyline twists. I didn't see them coming, but they didn't stir me.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to say that in an optimistic way, but I wasn't moved by this movie. It didn't make me mad. It didn't viscerally, like, I wasn't disgusted. I wasn't just hating it. I was just neutral. I was just, it's okay. It's a movie.
Yeah.
Like, and that theme went across the whole viewing. So yeah, I wasn't surprised about the chipper. I didn't really care who lived or who died in this.
Looking at some, so this is Men's Health. I'll link it below if I can find it again. These are their 70 best dark comedies. Now we're not going to read the whole list.
Okay, so it's an article Men's Health did. It's just any movie that's in the dark comedy category.
They've ranked
them. Okay, yeah.
Their favorite 70.
Okay, actually, yeah. Okay, give me a top so many.
So the first one, I don't know. Ready or Not in 2019. Get Out in 2017. Midsummer.
Because that's Jordan
Peele. In 2019.
A24. I have not seen that one. That's a dark comedy. I didn't think that was a comedy.
Number 4, Fargo. Number 5, Sorry to Bother You, 2018. World's Greatest Dad, 2008.
Wait, is that Robin Williams?
Yep.
That movie's horrifying.
Number 7, Inglourious Basterds, 2009.
I've not seen that yet.
I think Inglourious Basterds is much more objectively a comedy than some of the other ones on this list so far. Beetlejuice, 1988.
Seen Beetlejuice.
Really? I think Beetlejuice is objectively a comedy. So here's the thing. When I say comedy...
Can dark change? Like, can something that maybe once was a dark, like with the changings of seasons and times and culture and economies, like can that dark parameter evolve to where like the comedy stuff still stands, but like now it's not as dark as what some other stuff are, so now it's not considered a dark comedy? Like,
I'd say so.
Okay. I haven't seen a lot of these.
Both dark and comedy and dark comedy are subjective terms, you know?
Correct. Yeah.
Death to Smoochie, 2002. I've also seen Robin Williams.
I've not seen that.
Knives Out.
I've seen Knives Out. So I don't know if I'd make that a dark comedy.
Here's what I think they're qualifying as comedy. If somebody dying is part of what's funny, if the scary or criminal aspects are part of what's funny, that's dark comedy. And I think I'd agree. I think I would say Knives Out, yeah, dark comedy. I think it's more objectively
comedy. Okay, you know how like a rom-com?
Yeah.
Like I'd almost put like an action comedy. I would put Knives Out like an action comedy.
So
Or comedy thriller.
I think Fargo is very, very funny, but it's funny in a different way from like Knives Out or some of the other ones.
Definitely funny.
Super in 2011. I don't remember, but I know that I've seen Observe and Report 2009, Assassination Nation, American Psycho 2000. That's definitely dark comedy. This is dark comedy more in the style of Fargo and darker than Fargo, but it's objectively a comedy. It's very dark, very dry. Do you like dry comedies?
Give me an example. Because what I would maybe classify as a dry comedy, I'm trying to think of like Office Space.
Yep, I would say that's a dry comedy.
And I like Office Space.
It's like the difference between laugh out loud funny and kind of makes you think funny.
I like Office Space.
Like quirky comedies tend to be dry. Jojo Rabbit, have you seen that?
Yeah, yeah.
Taika Waititi does a lot of dark comedies.
I would say that's a dark comedy.
Yeah, oh, it is. Okay, absolutely. Okay, it's number 15 on this list.
Yeah, I would put that in that list, yeah.
I think it's much more objectively, like, it's less dry than Fargo is.
And
Fargo's
way more darker than this.
It's both,
than
yeah.
Fargo, yeah. Yeah.
Blazing Saddles, 1974. That's definitely a dark comedy, and not in the way I was satirically referencing dark comedy before, as having a black person in it. The jokes are dark in that, like, they're dealing with complex, usually tragic themes. Burn After Reading, which is another Coen Brothers. Heathers, 1988. Oh, Fight Club makes the list as dark comedy, and we'll be covering that. 21st on this
list.
That's
a dark comedy?
Yeah, and I would agree with that.
Okay, I'm eager to watch that one again because I just remember me being a hard, like almost like a psychological, not thriller, but like more psychological than it was comedy. Like,
I would say it's a psychological thriller and it's a dark comedy. Dr. Strangelove is 22nd. I would definitely say that's a dark comedy. It's very dry.
Yeah, yeah.
Pulp Fiction.
I've not seen that.
Last time I tried to watch Pulp Fiction, I wasn't in the mood for a dark comedy, and maybe that's why I didn't enjoy it. That's actually something that maybe that affected the way you enjoy this movie or perceive this movie. For me, a dark comedy is something I have to be in the mood for. And it could be...
I was eager to watch this.
But that's different.
I mean, I went in with an open mind, like, let's watch Fargo. Like, I'm ready to watch this. Like, it's like I didn't have any negative preconceived notions.
Okay.
But...
There are some movies where, like, I have to be in a specific... Like,
I agree with that.
Like, B-movies. I love B-movies, but I have to be in a specific mood to enjoy a B-movie. And if I'm not in that mood, I'm not going to enjoy this. And I might as well not watch it. I might as well watch something else.
I would say there's any movie that I know the context of. Not, like, so after watching any movie, now that I know what it is, like I would now put it in a category of like,
yeah.
Is this time of my life? Is this time week?
Am I in the mood for this?
Is this going to best fit? Yeah. So it
could be that given the right mood, you might have actually really enjoyed Fargo.
I'm willing to watch it again, not anytime soon.
Sure.
Again, we got a lot more movies ahead. Yeah. But like, yeah, it, maybe. And again, discussions always help. Like
Parasite's on this list, and I
you've seen Parasite.
I've not seen Parasite.
Oh, I thought you have. Okay.
I did not know it was a dark comedy, and now
you're a little more eager.
It changes how I'm going to go into it. Oh, this is Spinal Tap. I wouldn't consider that a dark.
That's
comedy.
That's just a comedy.
That's just a comedy
with some cringy jokes.
Yeah, cringe comedy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mockumentary.
Yeah.
Groundhog Day. I guess it does have some really dark themes, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I can see that. And that's a drier movie, too, mm-hmm. as far as the comedy goes. It's a little drier compared to, like, Ace Ventura.
Oh, sure.
Bruce Almighty.
Like, on a spectrum, yeah.
Yeah, like, that's a drier, more dialogue-driven, like, thinking.
Anyway, this list is linked below. We've gone through about half of them. I'm not going to go through the whole list.
2 hours later.
Yeah, this episode already needs trimmed enough. I've got no more notes here.
I honestly didn't have much. There was
some final thoughts and wrap up questions.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I didn't like this movie.
Who are you apologizing to?
To you, Nelson.
You don't need to apologize.
I don't care about the audience. No, it's not true. I love you guys. I'm glad you're listening. But just, I don't know.
Did you want to like it?
Yeah. Like, I go into every movie wanting to like it, except for a select few.
Yeah.
Like,
I don't go
Lawrence
into
of Arabia. No, I didn't. Honestly, I didn't get that movie a chance going in.
Okay.
And it met expectations.
Sure. I don't go into a movie wanting...
Clockwork Orange, I went in wanting to like it because I didn't know what to expect.
Oh, sure.
And I left that one devastated.
Yeah.
If it's a movie I'm unfamiliar with, I'm going optimistically. Yeah, Aliens is a good example. Like, I knew what happened. I knew the first one, never saw the second one.
Yep.
I went in hoping this one would change my mind, and it did slightly. Mm-hmm. It increased a little bit. Mm-hmm. But, so yeah, I especially for movies on the podcast, I try to give it a bit. I try to go in with no negative connotations unless I'd already seen it before.
Yeah.
Now, for Lawrence of Arabia, I watched the trailer and I think that one just put like a draw. Like, so it wasn't that I still didn't want to like it. It was just like I went in thinking I'm going to be bored.
You know,
we've touched on briefly
some of the situations going on in the Middle East.
Yes. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Only because we've brought up Lawrence of Arabia.
Okay.
So if you remember, Lawrence of Arabia, the plot is he's a British soldier during World War I. He's been tasked with helping the British Empire subvert the Ottoman Empire by leading an Arab revolt. Part of the conditions of that Arab revolt, this is real history, is that and Lawrence of T.E. Lawrence regrets his involvement in this process, was promising the Arab leaders, hey, this land, after all this, you guys figure out what to do with it. It's your land. You set up states as you see fit. But that's not what happened after World War I. After World War I, the British Empire, the French, and the Arabs had a joint ownership of it. I can't remember his name. I apologize.
George Bush.
a Jewish man in British intelligence used his position and used fears of a Jewish conspiracy, a Jewish Zionist conspiracy, to convince the British government that if they wanted help from the Jewish Zionist conspiracy to subvert all these other governments that the Jewish people had control in, supposedly. They didn't actually. He was leveraging the conspiracy that they did, that they should promise this land that the British Empire had control over back to the Jewish people afterwards. So then after World War II, the UN draws the boundaries for what will be Israel. One of the biggest reasons that there's so much tension in that area is because the Arabs and the Jews were both promised that land. Before that, Jewish people had significant populations in all those Arab countries. After that, those numbers go down. Some people say that this is because of genocidal tendencies in those Arab nations. Other people say, no, it's because the Jews now had a nation state that they could go to. I lean towards that second theory, because how would those populations have gotten so large to begin with? None of this justifies anything that happened on October 7th, but it does give some clarity. So yeah, directly, what's happening right there, directly related to a history movie that we've covered of T.E. Lawrence, Lawrence in Arabia. A very, very, very dry movie, and that's not a pun about the sand.
And I, yeah. Okay, let's get into our questions.
Yeah.
Would you recommend this movie, Nelson?
Of course I would. I like this movie a lot. I like Coen Brothers movies. I think this is one of the best examples of a Coen Brothers movie. I like Fargo a lot. I also recommend the show that it inspired, has its season 5 debut episode later this week.
Just to confuse you more, I would also recommend this.
Would you?
Before
we recorded?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I thought the acting was great. The way they portrayed their characters was great. Like I think the actors did a great job. The accents were great. The setting was great. It was just the story itself that I lost.
Yeah.
So, and because I know other people find depth in it, like I'm not going to question the value of others. Like, so yeah, like, so maybe this would be one someone else would enjoy outside of the quite a bit of F words and a little bit of grotesque violence. This I movie could be made for TV pretty easily.
The F words are really interesting because they're only said by those two characters. Almost everybody else is very, very clean language.
Yeah, I think you're right. To my recollection, yeah, it's just the
even
two.
Even then they're like really frustrated. Thugs. He's like, oh, darn it. You know, it's so it's campy clean with the rest of the characters.
Yeah. So no, I would recommend it. I can see why people would enjoy it. Mm-hmm. And for that reason, I hope people do enjoy it.
Yeah.
It's not going to be one I'm going to go, don't waste your time with it. Like,
yep.
It didn't hit well with me. It's rated R. Would you change the rating?
Yeah, I think it's PG-13 is fine for this. I understand that it's R because of how many F words are in it, but I really think that PG-13 is fine for this.
Even, yeah, this one could easily be put on TV.
It probably is.
Yeah, I could see either. Like,
there's no nudity, even though there's a sex scene.
I kind of don't want to use the word graphic, but like, there's obvious. A sex scene. It's like there's it's a prolonged sex scene with movement.
Yep.
It's on the screen.
But you see absolutely no nothing of substance.
No, but there's sounds. There's heavily applied sex visuals to go along with it, but no nudity.
There's no doubt that that is sex.
Right.
Yeah.
Has it aged well?
I think so. I think it's aged great.
Yeah. I agree. I like it's got that lo-fi I like the vibe that it gives. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it feels like a time capsule film, like old cars, older cars that are in there. Like, yeah, I like the aging of this film, and I like the setting of it. Would this be in your personal top 250?
I think it would. Yeah,
I don't know if this will make the cut for me. It is in the bottom half of my list that I'm questioning now. but yeah, I just, for me, I don't know if it's, I don't know. I don't see it being a yes. I see it being surpassed pretty easily by a bunch of other films.
Sure. So. Let me see. What did I rate this? Cause I rated this a while ago. I gave this 4 stars out of 5. That was before having watched it for this episode. Yeah. I don't see myself changing that rating. I think that's where it belongs.
I'll answer this last one first.
Okay.
Just because my answer will be a little quicker, and then we'll get into this question. So why do you think it's on the top 250?
Accents are a big one.
Accents are big. Not just the accents, the acting. Mm-hmm. Like, and I know this may sound contradictive to my not liking it, but I can respect someone doing a good job even if it didn't hit well with me. Like, they were believable characters even though I wasn't emotionally attached to them. The setting is pretty iconic.
Mm-hmm.
The snow... There's a couple shots that are just like, yeah, that's, I can see a lot of people this being nostalgic for them. Like, so yeah, I just, for a couple of those small reasons, I can see why it's on the 250.
Yeah.
But for me, I think it's the acting. It's the portraying of that specific region of people, that Midwest nice mentality. Like, that was believable. For me, that was the silver line of this movie. Marge and that whole style, culture, environment thing.
Yeah, I'd agree.
Okay, maybe you would have the shorter answer on this.
I also like, I think the Coen brothers has a big part of that as well. I think Coen brothers fans are a lot like Kubrick and Nolan fans in that they're going to positively review just about anything, you know? The difference here is that Coen brothers films, I don't think, get as much traction outside of their base because they are so different.
Now, they put out the Shakespeare movie not too long ago, right?
That was only one of them. That was only Joel Coen was involved in that. Macbeth.
I was going to say, like, are they still active, or are they just kind of doing one every now and then type thing? Like,
they've always been one every now and then.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Every couple of years.
Just specifically for the Fargo context here, like, obviously I'd seen Oh Brother, We're Art There, but like, if someone came to you and said, Nelson, I've never seen a Coen Brothers film,
where do I start?
Which movie would you recommend for me to start? Would you say this one?
Pull the list up again to double check.
Like, would you say from the movies you've seen, is this the definitive Coen Brothers film?
I think I'd probably either recommend this one or Raising Arizona for your first Coen Brothers movie.
And when did that one come out?
Raising Arizona was 1987. That was their second film together.
So it's an older.
Older, and that's
also a dark comedy.
Yeah, and it's Nick Cage.
Oh.
He's the main character. He abducts this. He wants to provide the perfect family for his wife. They're very, very low income. Again, that shortcut thing. And so he abducts a kid. And that's loose, very, very loosely based off of a true story of a kid that got abducted. Raising Arizona is a terrific movie.
Okay.
Also dark comedy. Very, I think, less of a dry comedy than Fargo is.
More blatant humor in that movie? Is that what you're saying?
Like, yeah. Yeah, so it's Nick Cage, Holly Hunter, Trey Wilson, William Forsythe, John Goodman, Frances McDormand, Sam McMurray, and Randall Tex Cobb. Randall Tex Cobb's character in this is, it's a force of nature. So yeah, I'd recommend it as well. I think Raising Arizona or Fargo is a really great starting point if you want to try to get into Coen Brothers movies. If you're not into comedies, if you'd rather watch this is a crime movie, either Miller's Crossing or The Man Who Wasn't There.
Have you seen No Country for Old Men?
A couple times, yeah. Okay. I like it a lot.
Now, I didn't know until after watching this movie. Mm-hmm. I knew this was a Coen Brothers film going into it. And it wasn't until after when I started doing my research that Oh Brother, Where Art Thou was also a Coen Brothers film. I need to see that movie more recently for me to compare them.
Yeah.
Because it's not fresh enough for me to compare it directly. I didn't pick up any nuances. But again, there's a huge time gap between watching Oh Brother, Where Art Thou
by nuances?
Like, I didn't pick up anything that told me, oh yeah, I can see this being a Coen Brothers film too.
Okay,
like,
yeah.
I didn't see any of them shaking hands anywhere. So I'm eager to watch that now because for me, like, whether I liked it or not, that movie was my gateway to the Coen Brothers.
Yeah. That movie, again, all about shortcuts, right? People taking shortcuts.
And that one's based on The Odyssey. So like that one, that one's an interpretation of an old, which is also a reason I like it. Like, I like whenever there's interpretation of like old historical texts. Like, I like when Shakespeare's redone, and that's been done multiple different ways.
Yep.
I enjoyed that, and I knew that going into Oh Brother, Where Art Thou. When that movie came out, I was in elementary.
Okay.
Or I was at the age where The Odyssey was being introduced to me.
Boys.
It just somehow worked where I'm like, oh, we just read parts of The Odyssey. Oh, this movie. Awesome. Like, there's just that one. I've got nothing but good memories from that movie. It's like, I will always have a soft spot for the Coen brothers. I'm just hopeful that I'm going to like more of their films. Mm-hmm. This one just didn't hit that way. So
yeah,
that's all I got. So I'll definitely watch this one again eventually, but it won't be for a while. I'm eager to watch more of their films on or off the top 250.
So there's this type of comedy called a screwball comedy. They're not very popular anymore, but the Coen brothers love them, and so they did one. So it's got a lot of physical comedy. It's got a lot of like Three Stooges type stuff in it.
Hyper slapstick. Sketchy. Like, you know, it's like, almost so, like super like.
Yeah, there's parts of that Home Alone where it could be confined as a screwball comedy. Hudsucker Proxy's got some of that to it,
Apple Dumpling Gang, Don Knotts and Tim Conway. That'd probably be a screwball comedy.
Yeah,
because that duo has a lot of that.
If at any point somebody gets electrocuted and their hands hair stands on end, probably a screwball comedy.
Okay. I looked up screwball comedy, and a lot of these are older titles.
Yeah.
So it's not something that's
not terribly common anymore.
Yeah. Later examples. Here we go. Raising Arizona is on this list for screwball comedy. Little Nicky, Anchorman, Our Idiot Brother.
Crime Wave, that's the one. Crime Wave specifically is like their most screwball. And that's a Coen brother. Coen Brothers with Sam Raimi, also who loves...
Really?
Yeah, he also does screwball comedies.
Three directors on that.
I think the Coens wrote and Sam Raimi directed.
Okay.
And it's got a lot of that like...
Okay.
Kind of zany, weird type of, yeah.
Is it, would you still put it in the dark category?
It's a dark comedy for sure. It's a screwball dark comedy.
I don't.
Because dark comedies don't have to be dry.
Right. But screwball also doesn't have to be dark, right?
Probably like, true.
Right. It's like, if screwball is just that over excessive physical. Because I'd say Three Stooges is. That's not dark.
It's not dark.
Except for it's in black and white.
Good point.
But yeah, no, I'd be eager to watch that because I don't know if I've seen something.
Crime Wave is very Sam Raimi.
Is it old?
It's like their second or third movie that they wrote.
80s?
Yeah.
Expand my horizons. Okay.
Anything else?
That's all I got. So, hey, thanks for listening today, guys. Next week.
Yes.
Very exciting.
Yes. We're having presidential candidate Joshua Smith on to do Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. It's what a great.
Literally the perfect scenario. Oh,
for sure.
Like, for sure.
Muppets.
With a North Dakotian accent.
Does she?
She definitely, like, oh, that character definitely has that, like, oh, for sure.
I always thought she was like more Valley Girl, but you're probably right.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, I guess it could be.
There's combinations.
There's crossover.
There. Yeah, Josh Smith next week.
For Mr. Smith goes to Washington. 1939. So it's an old movie.
James Stewart.
James Stewart. Old Jimmy comes back.
Oh! How come everybody's Jimmy Stewart impression just, oh!
I love, you've seen New Girl, right?
Yeah.
I live my life through New Girl. When Genslinger does his impression of Jimmy's, it's that exact same thing. Like it
fell out of Bradley's tree.
He starts with the sound first before he goes to an actual word.
You want the moon? I'll lasso it and give you the moon. Oh.
But yeah, no, I'm excited about that. And we're excited that we have a Patreon. So yeah. If you guys have not checked that out,
if you want to jump into the peanut gallery, if you want to listen to last Friday's episode where Jeffrey and myself discussed the best movie ever made, The Jerk, starring Steve Martin, available now. If you want to hear our thoughts on Godfather Part 3, and then next month, Airplane. Later this month, Airplane! And then starting in January, you'll be able to vote.
Submit movies and vote.
We already have a list building up of movies to cover. And some of those I'm very excited about. Other ones
are fake.
Are also on the list. Yeah, there's a couple of fake movies on
that
list.
We already have some fake submissions. Yeah. It's great. Love it. So
we've got some on that list that are already in the top 250. You don't need to submit those.
Yeah.
We'll get to them.
Easy, buddy. Easy. You know who you are.
Yeah.
Here's looking at you, kid. But yeah, so if you'd like to partner with us, check out our Patreon. We also have merch. Check out the link. End of the year's coming.
That's right.
We have a design that's quickly going to be unavailable.
That's correct.
So check out our merch. Grab some merch while you can. Others will be around forever as long as we're still here. That's one of the best ways to support us.
One of the interesting things about the internet is if we're not still here, nobody has our codes to take them off, so they will be there forever.
Ah, loophole. We're both stuck. If you can't do a monthly subscription, which is fine, I get that, I understand, buy a shirt, buy a sticker, buy a magnet. Those little things really do make a difference, and they help us continue to grow and move on.
You can get a coffee mug with a foul-mouthed duck.
Yeah.
All right, see you next week.
That's really all I've got to say about that. Yep, thank you. Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed this episode as much as we did.
If you have found value in what we discussed today, please consider leaving us a rating and review. And don't forget to subscribe so you never miss an episode.
If you have any feedback or suggestions, we would love to hear from you.
That's right. Tell us why we're wrong.
If you want even more content and ways to engage with us and each other, check out our Patreon.
page.
By supporting us there, you'll get access to exclusive bonus content and help us continue to create high-quality episodes, as well as help pay for our future plans. Links to our social media, merchandise, and Patreon are in the show notes.